And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I think that this week we saw a lot of courts getting involved in politics. In other words, we saw politics as law. After enduring, I don't know, two and a half or three generations of dishonest propaganda from right-wing circles about how judges should be neutral umpires and that the only way that you could do the law is by divorcing it from all political considerations, as if that's possible. Now that the Republicans, and especially the extreme right-wing Republicans, the Federalist Society-type Republicans, have a really significant position among judges and, more importantly, among court clerks, we see that they haven't the slightest compunction about using legal decisions, courtroom decisions, as a way to create law that they want, create policies, public policies that they want, and get rid of public policies that the people have voted for, but which these right-wingers don't like. And we've seen this happening with increasing frequency. And this last week, we saw a whole bunch of it, I think, didn't we?
Yeah, there were a whole host of cases on state levels, on federal levels. There's just an awful lot of litigation that's in the courts right now. Part of it is because we have this gridlock in the way the legislatures or the Congress is, you know, where it's very close to being 50-50, and also because of the fact that you have the propaganda that's out there on the right wing that won't accept defeat. They keep trying to get around it in some way, shape, or form.
Well, it's what you're right that the representation, the representatives are close, 50-50 on a federal level. But in fact, the population is not close, 50-50.
Right.
I mean, look at Roe versus Wade. Look at abortion. Two-thirds of the American people, at least, might be 70%, support the right of abortion. But the court is going to rule against it.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, we're back into democracy and chains.
Yeah.
Where the libertarians particularly have realized that their views are unpopular, but they will not accept the fact that the popular vote should count. So they keep trying to work around or finding ways to get their way as the dominant law or way of running things. And the courts, as you said, are just one of them. But, you know, the courts have in some ways surprised us, and you never quite know. But, you know, this week there are just a whole host of things that have been percolating that came to the fore. In preparation, you mentioned to me the voting rights case. You know, that came out of
Alabama,
where a Trump appointee essentially said that there's no private right to sue under the Voting Rights Act.
Which, by the way, the Voting Rights Act specifically says there is. The Supreme Court has in the past specifically said there is. And those are the only voting rights cases that have ever been allowed. The Department of Justice never gets involved in initiating a voting rights case. It's always private people who do it. And this judge said only the Department of Justice can do it, despite all of that.
Yeah, well, it's a Trump appointed judge.
Yeah.
And of course, we have the courts that are full of right wing appointed judges. Trump appointed about a quarter of the judiciary, the federal judiciary. And of course, it was an unbalanced one. It was predominantly white and male.
Predominantly white and male, but 100% people who passed Trump's litmus tests.
The Federalist Society.
Yeah.
which has been funded for years and years by the same people that funded down at George Mason University that we talk about in Democracy in Chains. Right. So it's part of, you know, I've always said that Hillary Clinton was wrong when she said that, you know, it was a vast right-wing conspiracy. I always said it was a vast right-wing infrastructure. But my thinking has evolved, and it's really both. It's a conspiracy that's funded by, or that's enabled by, an infrastructure.
That's right. And by the fact that you have a bunch of rich people who are willing to spend their money on creating and maintaining this right-wing infrastructure.
Yeah. And, well, look, we heard a couple weeks ago that Peter Thiel, the billionaire who helped fund Facebook and whatever, and there's been articles about his political philosophy. I mean, he is not a small D Democrat in any way, let alone a large D Democrat. And he's going to be out there trying to elect or unelect Republicans, I guess, who voted to impeach Donald Trump.
Well, he's a Trumpist, not just Republicans, Trumpist.
Trumpist, yeah. I mean, he's an autocrat.
Yeah.
And we see that.
And a great defender and supporter and promoter of Viktor Orban of Hungary.
Yeah. And these guys, you know, just because they have a lot of money or they were very successful doesn't mean they really understand how things really should work or should work in this country and how democracy enables them to do these things. Their egos think that they did it all by themselves, which was, of course, one of the great divides that we had back, you know, when Hillary said it takes a village, and the other side was, no, we did it ourselves. And, you know, Elizabeth Warren said, no, you didn't. You needed all of this stuff. I mean, look at Elon Musk. He runs a car company that's subsidized by the government because they allow tax credits to buy his vehicles, $7,500 tax credits. And then his product runs on publicly funded roads. But you won't hear him talk about that, you know.
Right wingers have some toe in the water of computerization. They all depend on computerization for their money.
Yeah, right.
The government paid for the development of the computer industry.
Yeah, through two things. One, through NASA, which needed computers to run the space program, and number two, the Defense Department.
That's right.
DARPA, you know, not Al Gore, invented the internet.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And we get into that, but we really should talk about some of these other cases that are happening, and not all of them have been bad for democracy. Not all of them have gone for the autocrats. We had that ruling this week that Donald Trump and his two of his children are going to have to testify in the civil case in New York State about the Trump finances. And, you know,
an interesting case is where the question is, did they lie to the banks? Did they defraud the banks? And Trump maintains that the valuation of his company is completely subjective. And therefore, he doesn't do anything wrong when he tells the IRS that the company is worth very little, and he tells the banks that the same company is worth a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's malleable.
Subjective.
It's malleable. It's not just subjective. Subjective is one thing. If you say my company is worth 200 million, or this property is worth 200 million, when a lot of people think it's worth 100 million. What's malleable is that on one day he'll say it's worth 200 million, on the next day he'll say it's worth 5 million. Right. That's the big fraud. And it's not just the lenders, because one of his defenses is, well, you know, they've got experts. They could appraise my properties. And, you know, if they didn't do it, that's their problem. But it's also the taxing authorities and the cheating on that.
Well, he doesn't pay taxes.
Well, well, we don't know that. We know one year he did, but, you know. But he claims not paying taxes, it makes him smart.
Yeah, it makes him really an American.
It also may make him a criminal at some point. We'll have to see. And that's the conundrum he faces, because this is a civil case. And if he takes the Fifth Amendment, as his son Eric has already done some 500 times, that is admissible in a civil case. And you get an adverse inference that if he chose to answer, the answer would be against his interests. In a criminal case, you can't even mention it. And of course, there's a two-track thing going on there with Letitia James and with with New York City as well, whether it's going to be civil, criminal, or perhaps both going on there. So he had that. It was not a good week for him in that regard.
Well, it wasn't worse for him, because in terms of the loans that he got from the banks, the basis, I've done this business. I've gone and gotten business loans from banks. You have to submit a financial statement. Right. The bank relies on the financial statement, not just on their appraisal, but basically they start with the financial statement, which is admissible to the bank because it's backed up by an independent auditor, your accountant, who has to submit a letter that says that this financial statement follows the accepted accounting rules.
Right.
That's the way it works in America. Well, Trump's accountant withdrew and said that all of the statements that they had stood behind for the past 10 years, they now withdraw from and say you can't rely on them.
Well, you know, they were kind of clever in what they did. They never did a certified audit on these accounts, which is the best way. What they said was, to the best of our knowledge, based on what we were given, these are valid. Now, Trump, of course, was going to go in and say, well, you know, I relied on my accountants to do the tax returns. But what the accountants are going to say is, wait a minute. This is the information he gave us.
That's right.
And of course, Trump has contradicted himself numerous times. You know, he was out there on the campaign saying he knew more about tax laws than anybody else in America at one point. Now, of course, he knows nothing. He's a Sergeant Schultz.
Everybody gets in the end gets to point the finger at his long-term financial officer.
Right. Who's also now been called to testify down in Washington, D.C. on the valuation of the I'm not sure whether it was the lease on the old post office building that became the hotel, or whether it was on the campaign use of the money. There's two lawsuits going on there, but it's interesting.
I think it was on the lease, because the government accounting office, the government general services department, in making the lease, relied on the numbers that this guy and the Trump organization offered through their financial statement to qualify the Trump organization to enter into the lease.
Yeah. Now,
he's wanting to sell for $300 million.
Well, yeah, he got first of all, the building itself was only, or the lease, value of the lease over time was valued at something like $225 million or somewhere like that. But he got an offer $100 million above that.
And who's the offer from?
That's the question. Some Israeli group or an Israeli back.
It's a Middle Eastern group, that's for sure, from someplace.
Yeah. Yeah, and you kind of wonder, because, you know, this is a pattern that Trump has had, where he sold a lot of apartments to kleptocrats and plutocrats from Russia way above the values. Remember that sale he did down in Florida, where he bought something and 2 years later sold it for like four or five times what it was?
Right.
This is money laundering.
This is why the real estate industry is so attractive to kleptomaniacs and kleptocrats and corrupt government officials throughout the world who are, you know, who steal money from their government's treasuries and have to figure out a way to legitimate the money.
Well, and they have to get it out of the country.
Exactly.
If they don't want to leave it in Russia, they want to get it out. So they buy an asset somewhere.
So they buy an asset that's worth four times more, that costs four times more than it's worth.
Right.
In the back rooms, they get back most of it.
They get
leave
a
tip to the guy who's facilitating it all. everybody's right. happy.
Except the people who now have to pay higher prices for real estate and the taxing authorities.
And who, people from whom the money was stolen to begin with. People in the originating country.
That's the basic thing. But now there's now some people in Congress have sent, I think Benny Thompson wrote the letter. He's the head of the January 6th Commission, telling the GSA, hey, invalidate the lease because it's based on phony numbers and violates the terms of the agreement, which if that happens, then Trump has nothing to sell. Yeah. He has nothing to sell.
Yeah.
He has nothing to sell. And of course, he's got money coming, you know, coming due and things like that. So, I mean, he's got that kind of problem. And then there was also a court ruling this week that that the members of Congress and other entities that sued him over January 6th and the insurrection could go on. They could deem him as being responsible for it. So we have that on, you know, all fronts. Trump's on the defensive, and the walls seem to be closing in. And then we have a whole bunch of cases in the states over elections and redistricting and things like that. It just came out this at the end of the week. The Ohio Supreme Court issued a ruling. There, the people of Ohio said, we want a commission, a nonpartisan commission, to do, you know, to end gerrymandering, in essence. And they, the commission came up and couldn't do it in a nonpartisan way, came up with a gerrymandered map, and the Supreme Court sent it back. And then they sent it back a second time, and I believe that they couldn't come up with a map this time. And the Supreme Court issued an order saying, come Tuesday, the day after the holiday, tell us why you shouldn't be held in contempt.
What if you hold them in contempt? Then what?
Well, that's a question. That's a question. You know, are these commissioners going to go to, are they going to civil contempt? Are they going to make them go to jail? Are they going to be fined? I don't know the ins and outs of Ohio law. Or is the Supreme Court just going to make its own map up like they do in Pennsylvania? Which, by the way, that case is in the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania now, the redistricting and reapportionment maps. And then we have, you know.
By the way, when the Republicans get away with this kind of stuff, it's effective. Look at Texas, where they have passed that voting rights law that severely restricted the ability to register and the ability to vote. You have people who've been registered 53 years in a row and voted all those years and who can't figure out how to vote and register under this law. And, of course, the Republicans keep saying, well, this makes it easier. This makes it easier. Well, the first results are in. And the first results show that overall 10% of the registrations were denied for the state, 10%. And there's already early voting taking place in the primaries in Texas. In Houston, 34% of the votes that came in by mail were rejected because they violated the terms of these new restrictions. In Austin, 20% of the ballots were rejected. This is Big Apples.
And those are, and those are Democratic cities. Yeah. And of course, not even the officials, the chief law enforcement official in Texas, Ken Paxton, the attorney general, who, by the way, has been under indictment for several years now for fraud, he sent out, or his campaign sent out information and gave the wrong information to the people as to where they could return their ballots or their applications.
And under the Texas law, if you return it to the wrong address, it's an invalid ballot.
Right.
And where did he tell them to send the ballot? To him.
Yeah. Instead of to the local local voting authorities. So,
and here's the attorney general. He wrote the damn law. He's supposed to know how it works.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that that's a conspiracy against the people.
Yeah. Well, there's other conspiracies.
It's more than a conspiracy. It's an actual act.
Yeah. Well, is Wisconsin, they're having a conspiracy. They want to undo the Wisconsin certification of the election, and it's tearing the Republican Party apart from 2020. They're still looking backwards. So, and in Florida, we have the situation where somebody went in and talked to a lot of voters, and the voters then, when they wanted to vote, found out that their party registration had been changed from Democrat to Republican.
Was that done by Italian satellites?
Jewish lasers? I don't know. Dominion voting systems? My Pillow guy?
No, it was done by the Republican administrators who were running the Republican voting registration apparatus.
Right.
That's who did it. And then nobody denies that they did it.
Right. And, you know, and then there was another case. It wasn't a voting case per se, but we had this filing in a case by John Durham, who was the guy that was appointed by Bill Barr to look into, I guess you would call the Steele dossier issue and, you know, the Hillary campaign.
Well, what he was appointed for was to get back at the Democrats, right?
Right. And he failed in doing anything before the 2020 election.
This was the Republican version of the Mueller committee.
Yeah. And he's still, you know, well, part of it, he's like Ken Starr. He keeps this thing going without, you know, getting anywhere, so to speak. Nobody knows exactly what he's doing, but he had this filing. He's indicted one person, an attorney, for what he alleges is lying to the FBI. Most people who looked at it say it's a pretty weak case, but the right-wing media in took a couple lines out of one of his filings in a case and blew it up into something that Hillary Clinton was spying on Donald Trump, not only in the campaign, but as president. And Hillary gave a speech and said, you know, those guys at Fox are building a pretty good case for me to sue them for defamation. Now, before she gave that speech, they had mentioned the defamation case, according to something I saw, about 100 times in one day, and only mentioned the information about Donald Trump's accountants twice. But the next day, all of a sudden, Fox News stopped mentioning it at all. Well, actually, it was the day after John Durham actually said, hey, wait a minute, you guys are blowing smoke. I never said anything about when Trump was in the White House.
That's right. His allegation that there was that private actors were tapping White House records, White House telephones, White House computers. He was talking about the Obama White House, not the Trump White House.
Right.
He was actually attacking a Democratic Party lawyer for spying on the Obama White House, and did it in such a way that the Republicans were saying, see, the Trump White House is being spied on. And Trump then said, see, my apartment is being spied on. If you read what Durham said, he actually didn't say any of those things.
Yeah. You know, you and I have a dispute about John Durham. I think he looks like Vladimir Lenin. You don't, but anybody.
He's too fat.
But, you know, sometimes you wonder how, if a guy's going to go into court, why does he want that appearance? You know,
Why doesn't he come into court with an argument that is defensible?
Yeah, well, we'll find out. Maybe that's why he hasn't been pursuing so many things. He's just staying on the payroll.
The case that he brought against this Democratic Party lawyer is that he lied to the FBI, and he says that's a crime. The lawyer points out, the lawyer's lawyer points out, even if he did lie to the FBI, it's not a crime. It's only a crime to lie to a government body if that lie is intended to change their decision, and it does change their decision.
If it's material.
If it's material. And that's how you define material. It changes their decision. And even if he did lie, and the lie was, do you represent anybody in this case? And he allegedly said, I represent myself and this other guy. And Durham said he didn't represent only himself and the other guy. He also represented a third party. And that's the lie. And yeah, he left something out. The material is because if the FBI knew about it, they'd have asked him more questions. Well, even if they wouldn't have asked him more questions, the point is that's not the decision. The decision is whether to investigate. And the FBI would have investigated under any circumstances based on the material that the guy, that the lawyer brought in. So the whole case is preposterous. Durham's case is preposterous.
Yeah. You know, we talked about Republicans against Republicans. We had an instance this week where Democrats went against Democrats in that most Democrat of cities, San Francisco, where Joe Biden won over 80% of the vote. And the school board had a recall brought against
them. I think it was Democrats that recalled the school board. I think it was reactionaries, right-wingers.
Well, but who are the voters? I mean, the voters are Democrats. And they recalled three of the members of the school board, I think the president, the vice president, and another member, by over 70% of the vote. And this is a discontent that we're seeing about parents. And it involves other issues about meritocracies and things like that in the schools. But, you know, when you spend your time trying...
It's an attack on affirmative action, right?
Yeah, it is. But when you spend your time trying to decide whether to take the names of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln off the schools instead of addressing the needs of the schools, this is the kind of thing that you get in terms of pushback. And it gets amplified. It gets amplified over time. On that, but speaking of recalls, we have in Pennsylvania one of the Republican candidates for governor, Jay Corman, the state Senate leader, who says he wants to have an impeachment. There's no recall in Pennsylvania. He wants to impeach the DA of Philadelphia. It's not good enough to let the voters of Philadelphia have their say, which they did last year and reelected him.
But he got a huge vote, right? He got about 2/3 of the vote.
Yeah, with very strong opposition from the police and others. And he still won by a large margin. But they want to get rid of him. They're blaming him, like they do in New York City, the DA, for the increase in crime that we're seeing. You know, in some instances...
Actually, we see a decrease in crime. The crime that's increasing is murders. But overall, crime is down.
Well, but there are other things, you know, whether they're prosecuting shoplifting and things like that, and you're seeing that stuff.
The crime that's up is the crime against the environment.
Well, that
continues. That it continues and advances.
And that, you know, that's part of the strategy is take the emphasis off of those things.
Yeah,
you know, distract people with the other stuff, the social issues and what have you, and, you know, go attack Hillary Clinton if she's going to be the next nominee for president, things like that.
Yeah.
That's what we're seeing.
And we're seeing that they're able, having made a beachhead of having really established themselves in the courts, the right-wingers are using the courts.
Yeah.
So they've got, A, you can't vote. B, you can't register. C, if you do vote and you do register, we don't have to pay attention to the laws you want. If you manage to pass laws, we got courts that'll declare them illegal, unconstitutional, even if the plain reading of the law tells you that they are legal and they are constitutional. But we're the judges. We can decide that. Okay. So it's a full court press here.
That's what it is. And this coming week, we'll probably get the ruling from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court on its redistricting and reapportionment things and see if the primary gets pushed back. Meanwhile, it's President's Weekend. I don't think any of the presidents up until recent years had would have seen a lot of this stuff, except, of course, for Lincoln in the Civil War.
Yeah. Well, that we have to consider next week. We're done for this week.
Yeah. Okay.
See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.